Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indest, your host, and we're here with Sean Severson talking about the new And How record. Sean, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
So what took you so long to record a new record?
What's that?
What took you so long to record a new record? Usually you have like three out a year.
Yeah. I started, I work for the school district, so I kind of tried to plan my year out now to where I have something to get me through the year. So I milk and then a record the entire school year as much as I can. It didn't really work in my favor. It seemed to take too long. I kind of liked it when I was popping them out left and right, but I don't know. It doesn't really make them any better. It just takes longer.
Well, so that's interesting because everybody has, you know, a different songwriting process. So if you've took a longer time to do it, did that change like the way you'd write a song normally? Because now you're like, hey, I have more time to write this. How did that impact your actual songwriting?
Oh, yeah. Well, normally I don't. The songwriting thing takes about the same amount of time. It's kind of like a, it's kind of like a on-off switch. I write songs and then when I decide I have enough or a little more than enough, then I'll stop. And I just have to, you know, stop cold turkey. And so the part that took the longest was, I think I wrote most of the songs during summer break. And then when we went back to school, I, you know, waited to start the recording. And instead of doing like I would do in the past, I would usually have this weird thing in my head that I had to finish a song in one evening or it wasn't real, man. So now I would like, you know, get some mics up, get the acoustic guitar track down and go, that's it for tonight. do something. So that's what took so long is the recording process, just doing one little thing at a time before I moved on.
Well, that's interesting. So when you finished writing, so would you write a song and then start to record it, or you'd write all the songs and then try to record a record after that?
Oh, yeah, usually what I do is I'll write them. They tend to come pretty quickly, and that's kind of works the best for me. You know, so I'll write, like, in a month, I'll write just a bunch of songs. And you know, then I can, they're close together. I can tell if they sound too much alike. And I can can one or the other. But, yeah, I'll write all the songs. And then when I get, like, maybe, you know, 14, 15 songs that I feel like I like, then that's when I'll stop. And then I'll start recording. And, you know, somewhere in there, there might be, like, a couple that just didn't work, or maybe there was some kind of light concept going on and it sounded a little too obvious. So take those songs out.
I got you. And are you able to then, while you're recording, not write? Or do songs just keep coming and then you're trying to finish so you can...
No, I just stop. I just stop. I think if I were to start writing songs again, I would just forget about the old batch and start again, and then I would never record anything. I think I would constantly be thinking the next thing was better. So yeah, that's what I do. Sometimes I'll you know, in the process of trying to figure out maybe a part, I'll accidentally start writing a new song, and I'll just forget it. I'll just, no matter how much I like it, I'll stop because I don't want to get back into that writing thing again.
That's so, some people say, you know, they can't do that. That if they stop writing, it's kind of over with. I guess you feel like you don't have any problem going, oh no, I'm not going to be able to write a song again. You can just turn it right back on.
Well, find some wood to knock on. I haven't yet.
Now that I put it in your head?
Yeah. Thanks a lot. This will be my last album. No, yeah, it's always been like that. I don't know why. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, you know, it's been, you know, now I can start writing songs again, and I do, and I, you know, it's for me, it's a really good thing to turn it off too, because I'm never really trying to recreate myself. There's always a sound that I like that, you know, and I think I've said this to you a million times, but there's always a sound that I'm looking for, and it varies a little bit. Things will change. Oh, now I kind of want to get this involved. I want to do this. I want to do this. So I'm not, like, you know, rewriting song structure. I like the Beatles figured it out, and that's all it needs to do. And so it's a good idea for me to stop too, because then I have some time for that slight little variation in what I want to do next time. It might stand out a little bit more, so it doesn't just sound like one continuous album every year. Probably still does, but yeah, you know, I might just even get some, you know, a new drum sound or a new guitar sound that's just going to change a little bit, and it's nice to have that time in between.
Yeah, for sure, because then and then maybe you can think about something new, like, oh, what if I mic'd it like that? I know when I first heard the new record, I really was, like, impressed with the snare sound, not necessarily compared to your other snare sounds, just in general. I was like, man, you really got this thing to pop through. So, you know, to your point, you know, if you take your time in between it and you try to do something a little bit different each time, it, you know, it's definitely noticeable.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. There's always kind of that, with me recording in a really small space, so I want the drum overheads to have, like, a big sound of their own, but then, you know, when you want to bring out something else, it's in a small room, so everything just bleeds through. It's all mush anyway. So this go around, I kind of, like, got chunks of foam and covered the mics up so the snare could have its own thing. So if I wanted to EQ, which I guess I didn't EQ anything on the drums other than the kick drum, but if I wanted to, I guess the thought was add some high end of the snare. I'm not going to make the cymbals come out even more, but I lucked out and didn't have to do anything. So.
Yeah, that's always nice when that happens. I was recording a bit yesterday with the cajon, and it's just like, do I want to fool with this later? No, I'm just going to move the microphone around till it sounds like I want it to sound. Mm-hmm. And not have to come back in later and, you know, tinker with EQ and then make it sound unnatural and, you know.
Right.
So let's talk about the recording process a little bit, because you don't record on a computer, and most people at this point do. You still record in a very linear fashion, and a lot of times what people do on the computer is they'll say, okay, that guitar track sounded great for the first verse, but then I got out of timing, so I'll just copy and paste, and you know, that's kind of what we're used to hearing. You record on a digital recorder, but it's still, you kind of record in the old-fashioned way, right?
Yeah, hit play and record. If it screw up, you start over. Since I'm doing it myself and I don't have anyone to punch me in, which I don't even think I could sing in front of anyone anyway, but if I did, you could punch in and fix something, but you know, by the time you run over to the recorder and try to punch in and go back in, you're going to sing it completely different or a different volume. Or so if I can't get a vocal from the start of the song to the end, I just start over. The same with guitar. I don't think I ever punch in anything, you know, unless it's like a guitar wank or something, you know, that's only going to come in the middle of the song for 30 seconds. Then I'll punch in or whatever. But yeah, otherwise I go right in there and go for it.
Yeah, that's kind of necessary anyway, because you don't want noise all in the background. If something only comes in every, you know, 30 seconds or something, if you keep the track going, you're going to pick up all kinds of other things that you probably don't want. So you were...
I'm not good with technology either, so the easier the better. And I even ran into trouble with this one, with the SD cards. Apparently you can't keep using the same one over and over again.
Well, I think if you reformat it, you'll be fine.
Well, I did that too. I don't know. A horrible thing happened where I recorded the whole album, and then I went to mix it, and there was something happened. I don't know what, that wasn't there, but there was a weird sound on everything, and I narrowed it down to the track that the kick drum was on. And I just couldn't get it to go away. I tried to EQ it out, and I tried to do everything. It wouldn't go away. I even thought of like just recording the kick drum, you know, trying to like sit there and get the kick. And I ended up having to re-record all of the drum tracks over the top once my click track is gone and everything, and just kind of try to listen and re-record every song's drum part. It's horrible. I want to do it again.
Yeah, that's incredible. You can't tell that you did that. And, you know, the rule is, drummers hate when they have to do that, right? The rule is, put your scratch track down, let somebody play drums on top of it, and then everybody comes and lays down their tracks on top of that. You did it the exact opposite.
I think real drummers say that they are the click track, but I'm not a real anything, so I have to go in and try to play over the top, whatever.
That's great. So how are you distributing this thing? So you see, we're moving in a progressive way here. We're talking about songwriting, then recording, and now distributing. So how are you getting this thing out there?
As of right now, nothing.
Okay.
I've made a couple of CDs. Nothing right now. I've just made a couple of CDs and given them to a few people. But what I will do is I'll put it on Bandcamp, and with Bandcamp I'll usually have it just free, so if anyone ever goes there they can get it for free. Otherwise, you know, the CD Baby distributes through everything, you know, all these things that I don't really know what they are, but you know, I think we were talking a while ago about Spotify and how like you'll get like 10,000 album listens, and you think, you know, back when we were kids, you'd have been a rock star with that. And now you get a $30 check, so you can go buy the new version of the White Album or something.
Right. It is weird. I think Eddie Perino was telling me, or maybe you were telling me this, but one of the guys who wrote a song with Paul McCartney, I think it was on a recent record, said, you know, if this would have been in the 70s, writing a song with Paul McCartney would mean, you know, I'd get to build a new swimming pool, if not buy a new house with a swimming pool. And now it means, was that you telling me that?
No.
Well, now it means, you know, $300 or whatever. It is a massive difference, how things are distributed and what people are doing it for and what kind of money people are making. And now, I just saw CD Baby, which I have two albums and a single out on, you know, they're distributing to TikTok now. And that's, I know you don't know what TikTok is.
I got an email saying that my songs were on TikTok, and I asked the kids at school what it was, and I don't know. I still don't really understand.
It's nothing. It's way, we're way too old for what it does, but they make like 15-second videos, I guess, and they can use your song, and then you can make some money from that. So it's just interesting to see how, you know, you're putting a record out, and I do a lot of EPs and singles, so it's a little bit different for me, and then I just make compilations. But, you know, you put something out that you want someone to experience in its entirety, and the best thing you might get is 15 seconds of a guitar riff, or maybe the end of the song, or maybe where like it breaks down in the middle or something, and that's what's getting put out there, and that's what's getting monetized. So it's a whole different.
And it's probably the part with the one snare off snare hit that you can't stand to listen to.
Probably.
No. Why not 15 seconds?
Isn't that I feel like the older I'm getting, even though I'm starting to do like more indie stuff. You know, I'm recording this interview now on the H4N Pro, and I've recorded a lot of stuff on this thing and mixed it down. I'm recording like a new synth record on this and mixed it down on the H4N Pro, which means I have to have everything, the microphones perfect, the synths perfect, effects, everything's got to be recorded, because there's no way I can go back through unless I'm going to do something digitally, which I don't want to do. That defeats the purpose, and fix it up or whatever. But even though I'm starting to do it like that, I feel like I'm becoming a better engineer, and things are sounding better than when I just say, I'll just lay down something and then fix it on the computer. I feel like I'm, you know, spending a lot more time with mic placement and all that kind of stuff. That being said, to your point, I go back and listen to some of the other stuff that I recorded, and I'm like, why did I record the cymbals like that? You know? So, I think with age comes, a little more, maybe the hearing goes a little bit, but at least for me, I'm starting to hear things in older songs that I'm like, I would have done that way differently now.
Yeah. I was thinking about that sometime this week for some reason. How, you know, like, you'll see older artists and you think, wow, they haven't written any new music in like a decade. And you think, what's going on with that? But I was thinking, my little theory, my hypothesis is that, you know, with a well-known artist, they probably already made the best sounding album they could imagine. You know, they went into a studio, they weren't running around trying to get the best sound out of a $30 Chinese microphone.
Yeah.
They had someone else doing it with really good equipment, and they, you know, wrote songs that they loved, and someone made them sound even better than they thought they ever could have sounded. And, you know, when you're done with an album, I don't get too hung up on this, but, you know, you kind of want to outdo yourself a little bit. And that's sometimes the motivation, I think, is if you're well known, you really want the last thing you did to be the best thing you did, I would assume. But the cool thing about being like an independent artist like we are is you have so many things that you can get better at, you know? I'll write a batch of songs because I'm excited about new microphones I got, you know? Or I want to try a room mic, you know, I'm going to stick a mic up against the wall and hear how that sounds on my drum set. You know, so we have all these other motivators and all these other things that we can get better at because we're doing it all ourselves. So we don't get tired of it. You know, maybe everyone who listens to it gets really tired of it. Like, I mean, they're still making CDs or whatever, but, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. I remember when I was like 12, there was a guy that I really liked that was on a major label, and he got dropped, and then his next record, you know, even though I might have been 10 or something, but I could like visibly hear the difference. I could hear the difference even at that young age, like, wait, this doesn't sound as good as the last record did. And I think that's got to be a bummer, you know, on some level. And then you know, then you got to chase down, and then you go into debt, and then you do a $20,000-$40,000 Kickstarter or whatever, so everything sounds up to a certain level. And I don't know, I feel like that's I'd like to hear what a lot of, you know, what people are writing about. And to me, I'm more song oriented. And I think you can be experimental. And I mean, just case in point, you know, the Choir, their album, they got nominated for the Grammy, for a Grammy for, you know, from what I understand, Steve couldn't even fit his whole drum set in the room they recorded it in. You know, it was just kind of like Flap Your Wings, a great record, but just he had a beat like on a floor tom and a snare or something. Just because of the way that, you know, but that got nominated for a Grammy and has some great songs on it. So, I don't know. To me, I'd rather hear those kind of records than somebody waiting a really long time, unless you're Peter Gabriel, because that dude puts out some really great records. And I think his latest records are, you know, they were definitely worth the wait, song wise and production wise. So I think if you're trying to achieve something greater and bigger, and it's harder to do the older you get, I do have to admire him for waiting and putting out some really great records that are well made, and the songwriting is really good too. But, you know, he has his own studio, so it's a little bit easier for him to do. But there again, he also didn't say, let me just put something out because I have a studio and people want to hear it. You know, he took his time and tried to do something to build his catalog and not just put something out just to put something out. But he's also a multimillionaire, and he doesn't need the money, or some people do, and so they have to put out a record a year and then go on tour because that's the only way they can feed themselves and their family. So,
and I wish more people would do like what Carrie Taylor, you know, Daniel Amos has. How do you pronounce that? Patreon? Is that And he's recording these songs at home. And, you know, they're not the big production sound. They're, like, really, really well-made. They almost do better than the stuff I do. But, you know, it's still, like, not like his regular went down to the green room kind of sound. And he continued to do that. I think that's super cool. And then now he's putting out an album. Last I heard, it's going to have, like, 21 songs on it. And it's in a studio. And I think it's going to be a lot of those songs, like really, you know, studioed up.
Yeah.
And for a lot of artists, I wish they'd do that. I mean, and it's really cool to hear Terry Taylor do stuff in kind of more of a intimate kind of way that, you know, you and I do it. You can picture him just kind of throwing a mic up in his music room and going for it. And I wish a lot of artists would do that. I think Seal, I love Seal. And everything he does is just a mega production with Trevor Horn, and it's just lush and gorgeous, and you're crying just by the sound of the reverb. And you have to wait like 6 years for him to get an album out. And now he's saying, you know, oh, I'm done with albums. I'll put out a single every couple of years, and, you know, that might be my next step. That's the future of music. That's horrible, you know. In 6 years, you know, you have high school kids that are now too old to remember that they liked him. You know what I mean? And if he did something like that Patreon thing where Seal did, I would love to hear what Seal does at home. I would love to hear a song like a day after he wrote it with just kind of, you know, sparse instrumentation or whatever. And, you know, because like you said, you want to hear the words, you want to hear the voice, you want to get the feel of the song. You don't need to have all of that. So for me, it's really sad to think that I'll probably have to wait another 6 years to hear like one song that Seal puts out. And he only put that one song out because none of the other songs he thought were good enough to get people on the dance floor or something, you know? It's like overthinking. It's just way too much overthinking, I think.
Well,
I mean, there's so much music out there that that people don't have to listen to everything. You know, they don't have to. So if you know, you or I or Terry Taylor or Seal or anyone is putting out songs left and right, who cares? You know, why do you have to have the big 6-year disappointment? You know.
Well, I think though it's like. Okay, so from what I understand, and this might have changed, but every day there's 40,000 new songs on Spotify. It's a lot of songs, whoa, right? And I forgot mm-hmm. how many millions of songs have never been played. So I didn't have high hopes when I put my stuff up there, but thankfully, you know, I check my stats every day, and you know, usually something's getting played. Maybe not every day, but you know, it's pretty consistent. Although the money, you know, you got to watch the money add up from like 0.0006, you know, or whatever, you know, so that takes a little while, but it's not about the money. It's just the money is kind of like a rough idea of how many songs you've gotten played. But there's this article, well, not even a checklist on how to put out a single on Spotify. And I think what maybe he's talking about is, so the process, and I haven't done this yet because that last single I put out, I just threw it out there, but you could spend an entire year just making sure that the right people hear your single. So the marketing of that takes a lot of time. So I'm working on a song right now, so I'll put that out probably as a single because I want to spend a lot of time with you know, recording different microphone techniques and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a fool with that. So it's going to take me a while to get this thing out. Plus there's a show I'm playing at the end of the year and I got to have some new material for. So if I do it the way that they want me to do it on Spotify, what I'd do is I'd let Spotify have the song about 3 to 4 weeks before any other service gets it, including Bandcamp. And I would buy one of those lists of all the playlists, because that's how you really get played on Spotify. And then I think you can submit it to their Under the Radar or Radar playlist or whatever. So there's like this whole, you know, year's worth of work, or at least month's worth of work, that you should do if you want your song to have the best chance of being heard. And it does work because when I did the piano version of I'm Always Thinking About Her, it got picked up on a playlist on iTunes, and I can't figure out which one it is because of the way that I read the stats, but that's the only thing that really like skyrocketed that song. And that's I'm using that term I'm exaggerating a lot with that, but that's the only one that got a lot of play was through that playlist. So if you look at, for an indie artist, the time, the money, the resources, that's a lot of time. So let's say I get this song out July, August, September. I'll spend the rest of the year just marketing that, and then I'll start again next year. So it would be very daunting for me to try to record a full album or even an EP and then keep releasing singles. I don't know. I feel like for me, and maybe Seal feels the same way, although he has other people, sure, marketing for him and doing his thing. Like, you got to find some sort of workflow that works best with how you create and where you're going to get burnt out. But the idea for me, like recording a whole record and then trying to market it and all, I'm already tired thinking about it. So I guess it just depends on how you want to market your stuff.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think about marketing. I really don't. I'm an old guy now, and I haven't really cared too much about getting my music out, even while I was young. So the older I get, the less I really care. I mean, it was really exciting to get to get money from Spotify and think, wow, that's a ton of plays in my world. How are they even finding it? That's cool. That feels good. It makes me think, I should, instead of just making a handful of CDs and giving them to people I know, I should do the CD baby thing and let them distribute it and all that stuff like that. Why not? You know, it's cool that people might find it. But I'm no slap in the face to anyone who's really trying. That's great, you know, that they are trying to get recognition. But I really don't I don't think there's a whole lot of reason why I make music. I don't think that I'm saying this backwards, like Yoda. I don't think that there's much in that equation that matters if people are listening or not. I think for me it's just, you know, it's something I really love to do. It's a huge passion for me. It keeps me from being a horrible person, probably, you know,
right.
Because I'm doing what I love to do, and I feel so much better, you know, if I've recorded one night, I feel so much better about taking the kids on a road trip on the weekend, because I feel like I've completed something that I care about, rather than just going to work or whatever, and which, of course, I care about, but it's just kind of... kind of more of a way of life, something I've done since I was 12 or 13 years old, and I feel good with that completion, and I feel good with just kind of making something, you know, like my kid will draw a picture of the Mandalorian and show it to me, and wow, that's awesome, and he's so happy that he completed it, and you know, fix it on the living room wall, probably with duct tape or something really destructive, and he feels great. He feels a sense of accomplishment. He doesn't need to, like, call his friends over. Come check this Mandalorian picture I did on the wall that I put up with duct tape. You know, he just feels good about it, and he moves on. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
That's what it is for me. And, yeah. Yeah, I mean that's really all it is for me, I think.
But don't discount like the sense of community that we have doing this podcast with Down the Line and things like that. I mean, there is something important about that that I kind of take for granted.
I mean, I have a lot of friends through doing music and stuff too. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean,
as far as like an audience, I don't know if I have one or if I know anyone. Like, I think if there were to be an And How concert, I don't think it would fill a bar, you know?
Well, but yeah, I think, you know, the terms like fan and all, I find a little bit weird and creepy, but the terms like community and people like other musicians appreciating what you do and you're liking your stuff, that's where it's important to me. But going back to your other point, man, from being a child, you know, I didn't just magically appear into this world, and having children, your other point is just so important. I think we need to maybe hammer that out a little bit. The idea that creative people, sometimes their parents, their spouses, their time commitments, you know, they all sometimes are not that understanding sometimes, and they try to squash your creativity. But your point is, I mean, I resonated with it so much. I wake up early before I need to every morning just so I can write songs and play songs. And that helps me get through the day. But there's so many times when other people, and my wife is very supportive, right? I'm not talking about her, but when you're born in, let's say, into a family that doesn't understand that, there's actually a great Andy Griffith episode where Opie's not doing well in school. And so Andy tries to keep from playing football and stuff, and that just made it worse. And then I think Helen, the teacher, said, no, man, you got to let him go and do his thing. And that's, you know, have a fulfilled life. That's just very important. And there's too many parents that I've seen now that when I see their kids that are trying to be creative in any sort of way, making fashion or art or whatever they're doing, and their parents are trying to squash that because they want them to be a doctor or want them to be something else, they need to and let those kids be creative, because that might be what's keeping them alive. So it's very important. And as someone who grew up in a family that didn't really appreciate what I did, and you know, and I didn't do well in school, I got punished from playing music and stuff. And so I want to, you know, I think your point is very important, that if you're creative and that's keeps you focused and allows you to then be able to do all those other things, it's more important than maybe what anyone, spouse, parents, children, work relations, what any money, none of that's important to someone who values being creative and needs to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I also think, to add on to that, is that, you know, I think, at least with me, I'm probably not into trying to get other people to listen to it, because it's probably also something that I've always protected, you know. I don't want, you know, when I'm 13 years old, I don't want to know that I suck at guitar, you know, or I don't want to know that, you know, my drumming's not there yet, so give it up, or whatever. You know, I think it's something that I had an uncle, a great uncle, who used to show up at all the Christmas parties and sing harmony to happy birthday. Crazy, I don't know how he did it. And he played accordion, and he knew that I was really into music, and he'd always say to me, you know, music is the one thing that no one can take away from you. No matter what kind of job, what kind of life you get stuck into, you know, anything you dislike in life or anything, you blah, 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 that's the one thing that no one can take away from you, so you protect that. So I think that's probably what I've done, too, is it that one thing. And I do protect it. I do, you know, I don't put my name on my album. I'm Ant Howe. You know, no one knows who I am. Well, now they're going to ruin that one.
Oh, sorry. But I'll blot out your name.
This is Tim Pierce from Ant Howe. And, yeah. And, yeah, I think I do really try to protect my music. Try to just keep it not really... I don't tell anyone I know that I play music, you know. When you do the little... get to know each other, you know, sessions at meetings or whatever. What do you do for a hobby? I read autobiographies, you know.
Right.
I record music at home. Oh, and here's a link. Yeah, no. Yeah, I do. I want to keep it protected so I can have it forever.
Right.
Yeah.
But for every uncle, I've heard the opposite story many times, too. What are you going to do with that?
Oh,
you
really?
Can't do anything with that. That's not going to, yeah. And that's,
well,
that's
Uncle Kermit was a good one. Yeah.
That's where I get a little angry, because the people that I know, this is something that, you know, are very different than other people. I'm not saying they're more important or anything like that, but they've gravitated towards some sort of art form because that's where they find peace. And that's where they find their ability to communicate. And when somebody, who doesn't understand it, tries to dissuade them from doing that, that's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So lucky for you that you had,
totally,
you know, someone that encouraged you to do that, because I've heard the opposite story tons of times.
Mm. Wow.
So lucky for you.
That's sad, Indy.
It is sad. You know, and I'm the one trying to encourage those people. Man, don't listen to what those people say. You know,
right.
If you like doing it, and this is where, you know, you feel fulfilled, then you need to do it. Don't listen to what they say, you know. It's
right,
like
yeah.
the you know, they got uncles like the Dan's dad on Roseanne. I don't know if you ever remember that, but, you know, just the salesman. It's always got to be about monetizing something or whatever, and they don't understand the importance of just how important it is just to do it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, I think it's kind of a new thing, because I don't remember this when I was a kid, but...
well, that was so long ago.
It's the opposite thing. Like, it was. But, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, oh, I really want to learn to play guitar, and the first thing I want to do is make up a song about something that bugs me or whatever, you know. And you're trying to express yourself, and you're trying to learn an art and get good at it and be this and be that. And it's all about that. It's all about a personal goal and a personal thing. And then maybe if you get good at it, then you're like, hey, I'm going to get a band together and we're going to play and maybe I can make a career out of this or get a girlfriend or something like that. But it's the opposite now. I think in the school where I work, every kid is already a rap star. They already have the ultimate confidence in themselves, and they already have a Snapchat thing showing pictures of them and with their DJ name, and they haven't written or recorded anything yet. And they don't play an instrument. They don't, you know, nothing. It's just this, you know, or at best they'll find like I'm a dog in this. I mean, it's great that they're doing anything, but they'll find like an already recorded beat, you know, with the going on and something like that. And they'll rap over it. and then that's their, you know, that's their wrath. If they get that far, they get that far to where they actually do something. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's weird because it's the other way around. It's the celebrity trying to become the musician. You know what I mean? Rather
right.
than like the musician, you know, maybe becoming a celebrity, or maybe bringing, or maybe after they become the musician, they present themselves to someone or something. Hey, look what I did. But it's the opposite way now. It's you create the image, and you create the hype, and you create the fan base, and then I better do something.
Right. I better get some people to write me a song.
Yeah, it's just a different, music seems to have a really different meaning. It doesn't seem to be, and I'm not saying, because I don't know, I was a different kid, but to me, music was something that felt very private to me. You know,
right.
If I got the new Cure album, Robert Smith wrote every one of those songs for me, and he knows exactly how I feel. and you know, it's a very personal thing. Where now, it's all an outward. Music doesn't have that personal thing so much. I mean, I'm sure it does to a lot of people and a lot of kids still, but I just see it as music is more of a social. What am I trying to say? Come on, you're the one with the words.
No, I totally understand. I remember the first song, the first real song I ever wrote, I played for people, and I was like, no, stop it. I didn't want to, you know. You weren't supposed to hear this.
Yeah, I'm still like that.
Yeah. Well, that being said, we're out of time, so now you can do some shameless self-promotion if you want.
Okay. By the time you hear this, hopefully I'll have it on Bandcamp at antal1.bandcamp.com. And I don't know, CD maybe takes a while, doesn't it?
It does. Not a couple of days, but yeah.
But you'd have to buy it on there. But, you know, maybe in a month or so it can be on Spotify and listen to it a bunch so I can get my eighth of a cent.
There you go. Cool. Well, thanks a bunch.
Thanks so much, Indy, for the interview.
Oh, yeah, no, it's always enlightening. And one, we need to just do a series on recording techniques. I think that'll be kind of fun.
That'd be fun.
Cool. All that'd right, talk fun. To you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Takes a life right out of you, starting over in the middle. It's hard to sing another tune when your vocal cords are brittle. We'll be right back. Song.